Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Lee from FPL Family.
And I'm Az from FPL Black Box.
So as at time of recording, game week 17 has remained open following the conclusion of Sunday's matches. The official Fantasy Premier League shared on their social platforms that more information will follow in due course. So definitely one for us all to keep an eye on. We're here, though, to talk about the rest of game week 17. There were huge returns for the likes of Dan Byrne and the ever-popular Cole Palmer. But it was the heavy hitters, really, that didn't really come in for us. Disappointing blanks for the likes of Son and Bukayo Saka, the highly captained Mo Salah, of course, against Manchester United, and Erling Haaland missing altogether, as feared by many FPL managers. So, Az, let's start with game week scores. How was 17 for you?
Do you know what, Lee? I'm delighted to say, for the first time coming on this podcast, it was actually pretty decent. 65 points for me, which is another big green arrow, really. I've halved my rank in the last couple of weeks. I finally got some defensive points. Gabriel coming in, Tsimikas, Livramento, all getting kind of six and above. And then Gordon, Palmer, Watkins, all delivering. So yeah, a nice healthy green.
I think this is a first for you on Off the Bench, isn't it? Whenever I listen to the Off the Bench podcast, it's, I've done this and this didn't go quite well. But that's a nice score, mate. I like that.
Yeah, it's the curse of the podcast, I think. Every time I come on here, it's been after a red arrow. So happy to finally have broken it.
Nice. Yeah, very, very good. I'd like to say that I've had a bad game week, because I'd like to put you even more in the spotlight. But unfortunately, I've had a really good week. So 78 I've got this week, which actually is my second best game week rank score of the season so far. So a big, big green arrow, fueled largely by the similar ones to you, right? Cole Palmer, which of course we're going to talk about with his 14-pointer. Brilliant. Bowen chipping in again with 8 points. Mm. Pedro Porro, Dubravka in goal. But it was Richarlison, actually, as a bit of a differential that I picked going into this game week, that brought in 9 points and a really, really good performance by Spurs and by him in particular. And if you don't mind, I'd like to start there. I think that's a good place to start. So if you cast your mind back to Friday night, Nottingham Forest 0, Spurs 2, as we get closer and closer to the Asian Cup and we get closer and closer to the headache of having to do something with Heung-min Son, first of all, is he in your team? And secondly, what did you make of the Spurs performance, and particularly those midfielders? Because Richarlison coming in at what is he in the game? Like 6.6, 6.7. Mm. He's super, super cheap. Obviously playing out of position up front, number 9. And Dejan Kulusevski, probably his best performance in a Spurs shirt, I thought he was really, really good on Friday night. So all of a sudden, as we get closer to the Asia Cup, we might have decisions to make about where we go with that Spurs midfield, right?
Yeah, I mean, the fixtures are pretty decent when Son's away as well. And the way Spurs attack and play, I think we want to at least have one of their options, even when Son's away. I mean, Son is a funny one. I mean, it's been in the last 10 games, he's had 4 double-digit hauls and 6 blanks.
Yeah, it's so up and down with him, isn't it?
So, like, you compare that to Porro, for example, he's only had 1 blank in the last 6 games. So Porro's chipping away with these kind of like consistent returns. You know, it was a clean sheet on Friday. It was been assists sort of before that. Whereas Son really is kind of all or nothing, kind of an exciting asset. I do like Richarlison. I think, you know, I had him at the start of the season. It was a complete disaster. He was one of my differentials that did not pay off, you know, and I'm trying not to kind of have that mindset with him. You know, that was the past. He's back now. He's playing well.
Yeah,
Spurs are a bit of a different side, and you know, I think he had some fitness concerns that he's shaken off. So I think any midfielder playing up front, I think we've got to consider, right? I really like the look of Richarlison going forward.
Yeah, I think he looks good as well, particularly when you think about the way that Spurs are set up. So I know Brennan Johnson went off with a bit of a what looked like a head injury. I think he's going to be okay. I think he's going to shake it off and be all right for the next game. But with him there, Son on the left and Kulusevski in the 10. Mm. And it was actually a bit of a shame that Brennan Johnson had to go off, because Kulusevski being shifted out to the right was still pretty effective. But I love him in that 10. I think he's really, and he has played that position before in previous clubs. And Ange is getting the best out of him. So with those three behind Richarlison, I mean, you and I could play number 9 in Spurs. And we've got Porro on one side, and we've got other attacking.
Me play, Lee.
Well, I know, right? I just feel like whoever plays number 9 for Spurs is going to get points because of what's around them. The question mark, I guess, I had going into this game week, because the transfer that I made was Richarlison in, as I mentioned before, which was a really nice differential for me. And I didn't have Son. So I was kind of a little bit behind the sofa with that Spurs game, as particularly in the first 20 minutes, because Son looked the most threatening. He looked dangerous, even though he was kind of a little bit out He was more left than we would like if you're a Son owner in FPL. But he was still looking pretty dangerous. And Richarlison wasn't really in the game much, wasn't he? He's kind of one touch here or there. But then all of a sudden, Kulusevski puts in a delicious cross. The assist was so good. And he just couldn't miss, could he? Richarlison had to get something on it. And of course, then he comes away with the goal and the point. So even though I look at the game and from an eye test perspective, I'd say, well, Son probably looked better, looked a bit more threatening. But just whoever plays nine for Spurs is going to get points. So Richarlison, I think, is a nice pick. And as we get closer and closer to the Asia Cup, there will be FPL managers that look at Son and go, well, I could downgrade him, put 3 million in my bank, particularly if I need a plan to get back to Haaland because I've spent that money maybe. Mm. Then Son to Richarlison or indeed to Kulusevski looks like an all right move. But again, you don't want to be taking Son out ahead of Everton at home, some reasonable fixtures before he goes to the Asia Cup. So it is a risk to remove him. But I'm with you. I like Richarlison because of, you know, obviously as I bought him in.
Mm.
And like I say, he's going to get points. He's going to get points. Talk to me about the guys at the back, though. I do want your opinion on Pedro Porro, because like you say, he's been ticking over the assists over the last few weeks. Looked really, really good. I don't honestly know. I've had him for a few weeks now. I don't know how he hasn't got a double-digit haul in the last few weeks. He's been dodging them like you wouldn't believe. Finally gets the clean sheet this week, but no assists to go with it. But still, you know, I think one bonus point, maybe two bonus points. So a really, really nice asset. Is he in your team, Porro?
No. That would be good, wouldn't it? For anyone who knows, obviously you can't see this on a podcast, but I've got a wall of kind of my previous fantasy legends kind of behind me. And Pedro Porro was my one from last year because he finished the season strongly. He scored a goal in the last game and yeah, ended up winning me a very important mini league against my my Black Box podcast host, Mark Southerns, who I'm sure many listening to this will know. Yeah, he's one of those players every week I look at and I'm like, yeah, I really want to get Porro this week. But then there's always like another fire to put out.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
goalkeepers for me. I'm having no luck with goalkeepers at the moment. And, you know, other kind of midfielder injuries and things like that. But I look at Porro and I think, okay, there is a big haul coming here. I mean, as I mentioned, only one blank in the last six games. In the game on Friday, three chances created, two shots in the box. Next year, I have 0.73.
Yeah.
So he didn't get an attacking return. He only got the two bonus, but an 8-point haul. But he had a shot in like the last like few minutes of the game, which got blocked. And I was watching that and I was like, oh God, if that had gone in, that would be, you know, 15, 16 points, something like that. Yeah. So yeah, he's someone that is concerning. And the issue with Spurs has been the lack of clean sheets. I think that's the only reason why he hasn't hit, you know, those big numbers. I mean, this was the first clean sheet they've had since game week 9. For example, which was against Fulham. Mm. And I think Forest were pretty unlucky as well not to get something from that game.
Do you know
game,
what?
Right?
It led a charmed life, that Spurs goal. I can tell you. It was an uncomfortable watch as a Porro owner waiting for that clean sheet to stick.
Mm. So that's the issue with him, is that you are kind of relying on these attacking returns, but it's almost like you can't really think of him as a defender. We've had these, you know, in the past with Trent's and with Robertson's and, you know, with all these attacking defenders, say with Trippier at the moment, you're kind of expectant of attacking returns. And he's been delivering. So yeah, I think he's a great option. He's you know, one of the main players on my shopping list at the moment.
To that end though, has he become a bit less of an option for us? Because Bissouma's going to be missing now for a while for Spurs. Obviously, he's got the red card at the weekend. He's going to be off doing on international duty as well. So they've probably got, a good couple of months without, you know, a key player, a key central defensive midfielder in Bissouma. Do you think that makes Porro kind of less of an option? I mean, we're already a bit hesitant to go there because of the way that, you know, Ange Postecoglou's got the side set up. It's very much full of attacking intent. And like I say, you know, the Forest probably should have scored at the weekend.
I don't think so. I think, like I said, I don't look at Porro really as a defender. I think he's getting into such good attacking positions. If you look at his XGI over the last few games, this isn't the expected goal involvement of a defender. 0.73 against Forest, 0.49 against Newcastle, 0.63 against West Ham, 0.64 against Villa. You know, it's only really that City game, which was 0.11, and all the other XGIs over the last sort of 6 weeks have been above 0.5. So, you know, these are crazy high statistics for a defender. He's 5.5 million. If you had a midfielder putting in those numbers, which we have had, you know, with Gordon, with Palmer as well, you'd almost say they're no-brainers. Whereas this is using a defensive spot at a time when clean sheets are really hard to come by for everyone. So I really like him. I don't think lack of clean sheets are a factor.
Yeah, I think you're right. At a time when the midfield slots are pretty sacred, right? Mm. Filling those five is quite easy. Whereas defensively, I mean, I'm looking at my team. I've got Lascelles and Tsimikas with potentially Robbo back coming soon. I've got Kabore in there. It's like, I could do with a bit of a revamp at the back there. I could do with a bit of revamp. One team that I am looking at defensively in terms of that revamp is Aston Villa. Another good result at the weekend. And actually, we've seen how good they can be at home at Villa Park. They're pretty imperious so far this season. Away from home, they've been good, I would say. But, you know, a win at Brentford showed their grit, right? They really pulled that one out of the bag. And the likes of Ollie Watkins and John McGinn, I've said before on this podcast and on the FPL Family podcast that, you know, those two players in particular really showing leadership qualities. And what did you make of their performance? And of course, we can talk about Ollie Watkins. There will be a lot of managers that took out Ollie Watkins for Darwin Nunez a few weeks ago, another asset that we'll talk about when we get to Liverpool versus Manchester United. And if they did do that move, if you're an FPL manager that did do that move a few weeks ago, because the Darwin fixtures look pretty good, it's now surely time to reverse that, isn't it? And bring Watkins back in for Darwin Nunez and kind of accept that that hasn't worked, particularly as I think Ollie Watkins is going to be pretty high up on the captaincy candidate standings for next week with 18. You know, obviously, Sheffield United at home looks really, really good. Outside of Watkins, though, where would you go, particularly defensively? Because I'm looking at maybe Pau Torres or some of the others to come in and sort of revamp my defence.
Well, thanks for mentioning the Darwin to Watkins move, which obviously
I did. You did?
As well, for a hit, I might add, a few weeks ago. Luckily, I did bring Watkins back in this week.
Yeah, okay, makes sense.
I've done
makes sense.
So, yeah, he came back in this week. So I got his 9 points this week. So I got to enjoy a Darwin blank again. but also I did get Watkins points. So yeah, it's not too bad. Yeah, I mean, they are a funny team away from home. I don't have that same trust in them. And Brentford, you know, without Tony, obviously, without Mbeumo up top, you wondered where the goal was going to come from. And they got one. And it's another game where Villa have not kept a clean sheet. And you know, the outliers really have been in those two massive games against Man City and Arsenal, where they won those games to nil. Very rare that they've done that kind of this season. So defensively, it's tricky to know where to go, because Cash was obviously so popular but disappointed people, and now he's kind of out of the team. Alex Moreno came in.
Yeah, what's
with the
your
goal.
Views on him? Because I think game week one, we all kind of looked at him and went, well, as and when he's fit,
yeah,
he's going to be great in this, you know, attacking fullback role under Unai Emery. So he's fit. Why are we not looking at him?
I'm a massive fan of Moreno. I think he's a great option. I didn't think Dean would kind of cover him. I thought basically Moreno would come straight back into the team when he was back. I thought Dean maybe, you know, with kind of the last few seasons he's had, didn't have the full trust of Emery, but completely wrong. Dean's been brilliant all season. And I think it's difficult for Moreno to come back in. He had to put in a performance like he did yesterday. Which he did. I just think you don't go there, though. There's too much risk of rotation between them. Also, you've got to remember, Moreno's just come back from this long-term injury. You know, this was his first start all season. We've got a busy fixture list coming over the next few weeks. So, yeah, I like him. But 5 million, you know, he's not a 4.5. He's not a 4 million. He's a slightly more pricey asset.
He's a fun pick,
with
though,
big competition.
He's a fun pick.
But Nunez was a fun pick, Lee, but you don't always get points for a fun
this
pick.
This is the problem, isn't it? The fun picks, yeah, they're great until they're not, right? But I had a look at the Villa defence. The non-fun pick, the sort of safe pick, if you like, is to go for Pau Torres, I think. If you were going to go into that Villa defence, he is in that sort of price bracket that you were talking about, sort of 4.5, 4.6 from what I remember of his price. And, you know, a couple of goal involvements already so far this season. And I think up until a couple of weeks ago, outside of Matty Cash, he was getting the most goal involvement, or at least the most big chances amongst a Villa defender. So he was the kind of next go-to after Matty Cash for me. But I can't help but feel like Moreno he's just got that upside, hasn't he? And with the fixtures coming, I've got Sheffield United at home, Burnley at home, Newcastle at home as well, even. I know that's a tricky fixture on paper, but we know what Aston Villa can be like at home. If you've got a 15 in a squad that can cover it, and you can deal with the odd Moreno benching, I just think the upside is there. But yeah, the safe pick is to go for Pau Torres if you're going to go there. And I think I probably am, by the way, because if I look at my defence, as I said before, Kabore is kind of there as a bit of a placeholder in that kind of 4.0 bracket. Simicass, I need to have a look at as to the sort of timeline as to Robbo coming back, but I think it's soon-ish. So he's going to be a problem for us at some stage. Lascelle potentially is a problem with Botman coming back, although Shaw picked up an injury, didn't he, at the weekend. So I do want to revamp that defence, and I do like the look of Aston Villa. It's just whether I go safe with Pau Torres or whether I have a bit of a punt on somebody like an Alex Moreno. Because if he can get a run of starts in this team, he's going to be dynamite for us in FPL.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Pau Torres has obviously got the flag on him at the moment. Yeah. So monitor that kind of that injury. I mean, Konsa has played, you know, almost every minute of every game so far this season. He's a little bit cheaper at 4.5. Diego Carlos as well, as he's played the last sort of five or six games. And again, he's 4.4, so he's a bit cheaper as well. I mean, like you say, Pau Torres has got that little bit more goal threat, I think, from the set pieces. I'm not with you on Moreno. I'm looking at defenders. You know, I'm looking at, you know, even Gabriel. I'm worried week to week whether he's going to start. He's had a few benchings kind of in the past. I look at Tsimikas. It's the same thing. I've got Livramento in my side, who, you know, with Burn back now, what happens there with the left
good,
back
though,
kind
wasn't
of spot.
He Livramento at the weekend? Very
opening
good.
Up. Oh, he's. Yeah. I mean, to get three bonus as well with no attacking returns. You know, he's clearly doing all the right things. That's what you want. You look at the players getting bonus. You look at Trent, you know, in the performance he had yesterday, three bonus in that game. These are the players you like, players that just get three bonus kind of out of nowhere. So I do like him. But do I want to add another rotation risk to my team in Moreno? No.
I'll tell you what it is. I've got Richarlison in at 1.5% owned this week, and he's kind of, it's gone to my head, isn't it? It's gone to my head. I'm like, right, let's just go maverick all over the pitch. I need to rein it in and go for Pau Torres. We've mentioned Liverpool a couple of times. We've mentioned Darwin Nunez and potentially him being a bit of an issue. We've mentioned Trent Alexander-Arnold there as well. Yeah, you're right. No goal involvement for Trent this week, obviously, in the 0-0, but gets the clean sheet, the three bonus points. Over the last 4 weeks, really ticking over the points, more than ticking over the points really nicely. And actually, as a Liverpool fan, the last few games we've played, the first halves have been dire. Like the first half, Liverpool versus Man U at the weekend, really not a very good first half at all. And it's only when Klopp then tactically changes it and he takes Endo off the pitch or somebody else off that midfield three and he'll invert Trent, or not even invert Trent, he'll just put Trent in midfield. And suddenly that forward momentum, and he's taking pop shots and he's, you know, getting in amongst it, Trent. We'll come to Darwin Nunez in a minute because he's still in my team and I probably do need to do something about him now. The four-week experiment hasn't really worked. You know, if you'd have said to me 4 weeks ago, well, I remember looking at the fixture, Fulham at home, Sheffield United away, Crystal Palace away, and then Man United at home. If you'd have said to me at the end of those four, he'd have more yellow cards than goal involvement, I'd have said you're crazy, right? But two yellow cards and just one assist across that four. It's been really, really disappointing. But talk to me about Trent first and foremost, because he's picking up the bonus points, obviously getting in those positions and doing all the things that ticking over the underlying BPS for those bonus points. A bit unlucky maybe not to have a goal. We had one whistling past the post, didn't he, against Manchester United. But is he now, should we be looking at him in a bit more detail? Is he now worth the money as maybe a Tsimikas upgrade? Or to go alongside Tsimikas in our defences. What do you think of him?
One blank in nine now for Trent. Yeah. So it's kind of looking over 3 points. I mean, that's a player that we've got to consider no matter who they are, defence, goalkeeper, wherever. I think the most amazing thing is that in the last four games, he's picked up 11 bonus points. So of a maximum of 12.
Crazy, Tom. Yeah, crazy.
And you know that if Liverpool get a clean sheet, just like Trippier has been for Newcastle, you know, it's not a six-pointer, it's a nine-pointer. Mm. And then you add in the attacking threat that he's got, you know, with decent fixtures coming. I mean, Burnley in game week 19, Newcastle at home in 20 with the injuries they've got as well. And Robertson, you know, we don't know how long it's going to be until he's back. So I think people like myself who have Tsimikas has done all right.
He's done fine.
To be fair,
he's done really
you know,
well, yeah.
over the weeks. Yeah, he's done fine. He's for a 4.5 million defender, I think he's been fine, but I wouldn't be buying him now if I didn't have him. I'd be trying to find that extra money to bring in Trent. And I think what you mentioned a second ago is the key. I think if you're looking for a Tsimikas replacement, I think trying to find that extra money for Trent is important. Trouble is, it's not easy because it's 4 million you've got to find. So this is where I think the Son downgrade to Richarlison, that frees up that money potentially to do Tsimikas.
Yeah, there are a few sort of cash cows in our team, even that, you know, getting rid of Darwin to, you know, the when I did the upgrade, I actually kept Watkins. I've had Darwin and Watkins for the last few weeks, which I'm very, very happy to have Watkins in my team. But it was actually Cameron Archer that I took up to Darwin Núñez a few weeks ago. Mm. And I do wonder whether, you know, yeah, a transfer to reverse that and get Cameron Archer back into my team with a little bit that I've got in the bank. Maybe that's the funding I need to go from Tsimikas to Trent Alexander-Arnold. And I appreciate that Darwin is a little bit cheaper than Trent in FPL, but we're kind of, let's just for now just say they're similar sort of price bracket. If you said to me now, you know, which one of those two would you rather have in your FPL team? I'd be Trent all day. Absolutely Trent or Darwin. I'd have Trent over Darwin, no problem at all. It's in terms of a Liverpool spot.
Yeah, I'm looking for any way to lose Darwin. I think going forward, it's just been...
Where would you go, though,
it's been more of a nightmare.
Where would you go? Because so you've got Watkins. So have you got Watkins and Darwin right now?
Yeah.
And Solanke, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, Solanke's the obvious one, I think, to get if you don't have him. I think just the way Bournemouth have been playing has been really, really impressive. And obviously, he's been scoring well. Calvert-Lewin is someone I'm weirdly kind of looking at. I mean, Everton, you know, have been incredible over the last, particularly the last 4 weeks. Four wins, four clean sheets. I don't think anyone kind of saw that coming.
Tough fixtures difficult fixtures.
Yeah, tough fixtures. But over the last four matches, Calvert-Lewin's played second highest XGI, only to Haaland in that time. Only one assist, but it's one of those ones where it's like, well, if he'd been scoring really well, you know, more people would have him. You talk about differential. We talk about that maverick pick.
Oh, you and I are on one today, aren't we? Just this.
I wonder if Calvert-Lewin is the one. I mean, it's Spurs and City, two tough games coming up, but they haven't exactly been great for, you know, keeping the opposition out.
Calvert-Lewin would be on, I think he'd be on more radars, you know, had he scored that header at the weekend. There was one header where he towered above the defender. And James Trapper, brilliant save from the young goalkeeper. But he got down so, so well to save it. I think Calvert-Lewin was already, you know, wheeling away in celebration. So had he scored that, I think all of a sudden, yeah, maybe we might start talking about him more. I don't know, though. And that was the thing when I was looking at Darwin out yesterday, when I got to the end of it, when he got hauled off on 70 whatever minutes yesterday, I thought, right, that's it. I've had enough. 4 weeks, more yellow cards than goal invite. I thought, wow, that's it. Get rid of him. But I was thinking where to go. If you've not got Ollie Watkins for whatever reason, just Darwin to Watkins is the simplest transfer you're ever going to make this season, right? Just get it done.
If you've got the money
If you've got the money, is quite
Watkins
right.
is a little bit more, right?
Quite right, yeah. So if you've got the money to do it, and if you haven't, I still think it's worth changing things around in your team and using if you've got a second free transfer or even taking a hit for Watkins, because he's going to be a good captaincy option this week, Watkins. So Watkins is the obvious one. And then it's kind of, okay, well, Dom Solanke, Calvert-Lewin, Alvarez, maybe. But I was shopping around on FPL for who's going to be my Darwin Nunez replacement. And I couldn't really confidently put my finger on anybody. Who are you? Who's top of your shopping list? And you're the same as me. You want Darwin out as quickly as possible. Where would you go?
Well, I did exactly the same as you. I straight away after the match, I went onto the app.
Who can I
transferred
have?
Transferred out Darwin. Press the transfer out. Who can I have? And I was looking at the options. And, you know, that's what's led me down this Calvert-Lewin route. I mean, there are decent picks like Kuna at Wolves. I really like. I think he's you know, Wolves have scored in what, nearly every game since game week one, apart from the West Ham game, obviously, at the weekend. So I like Kuna, I like Solanke, I like Calvert-Lewin. But there's no one other than Watkins who really screams, you know, this is the obvious kind of move here. And none of the players I've mentioned are hitting kind of big numbers. In fact, they're all scoring pretty, well, I would say similar to Darwin, but obviously not, because Darwin's been scoring absolutely nothing. But, you know, you don't look at their points and think, oh, okay, this person's kind of a must-buy. I mean, Alvarez is a nice pick, especially if Haaland's going to be out for a little while, but has the blank in 18. Maybe you move for him in 19 or 20 when they've got Sheffield United at home. But again, I mean, Alvarez hasn't exactly been doing great.
He's really off the boil, isn't he? Yeah, it really has.
I don't think he's scored since game week 9. So we're going right back there. He's had a couple of assists thrown in, but a lot of blanks. Unlucky against Palace, you know, with the free kick that was offside. I think it was Rodri that was offside. But yeah, still 30% owned. He's the opposite of that kind of, I don't know, maverick pick. You're buying a highly owned player who isn't scoring particularly well. I think I'd avoid
it. This is it. Let's talk about that game in City versus Palace then, because I must admit, you know, City at home, 2-0 up. You know, I was like, well, you know, put the 3 points on the board already, right? But Crystal Palace, fair play to them, dug in. And in particular, Mateta, I thought, made a massive difference, not just scoring the first goal, but the way that he hunted down the ball in the 93rd, 94th minute or whatever to get Palace into a position to win the penalty was absolutely unreal. One win in six for City now? Is this a bit of a concern for us in FPL? Should we be avoiding their assets? Or are we saying, you know, they're going to get the Club World Cup out of the way, Haaland's going to be back, you know, KDB will be back in the new year at some stage, they'll win 12 in a row and they'll still be there or thereabouts. How do you sum up City's kind of last few weeks? Because they've had a tough little run, right?
They have. I mean, one win in six is, we just don't associate that with Pep and the City team, who are so kind of relentless. And we've seen them maybe at the start of the season, not struggle, but, you know, maybe drop a few points here or there, and everyone's like, oh no, you know, wheels are coming off. But then it just, you know, the train starts rumbling, and it's just like every week is a win. And that's normally, you start to see signs of that around this time. That's what we've seen in previous seasons. Even if they're a little bit off the pace in the title race, you still sense that momentum's going to shift. But this year, I don't see it. I think they've got obviously some key injuries. You know, obviously Haaland and Doku, who's been brilliant for them all season. He's been out for a little while. We don't know when he's going to be back. Defence doesn't seem settled. Obviously Stones has been kind of in and out of the team. I mean, it's no clean sheet since game week 10.
That's
and
been
one
the
clean
key,
sheet
isn't
in 11
it?
Weeks.
Yeah, the defence. Yeah.
And that is the key, because if they're not keeping it tight, they're having to kind of chase games. And they've lost firepower with Mahrez going, with Gundogan going as well, and with the injuries they've had.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at investment in their players and thinking there's not really anyone that I want to really go for at the moment. I do think, though, it is very unfortunate timing that Man City have Sheffield United in game week 20, because that is going to come at a time when maybe they're not purring as well as we've seen. And I think that's going to be when Haaland, we're just not sure what the state is. Because even if he's back, is he fully fit? Is he fully ready?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, we're going to see, because there's the Super Cup starting on Tuesday. So we're going to see if he's kind of in the squad, on the bench, starting or whatever. But most of us are going to be selling Haaland or have already sold him. We've got to have our eye on game week 20. Because if he's back and fit for that home game, you're not going to want to go about him, surely.
You're going to want him.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're an interesting watch, aren't they, at the moment? I noticed when I was looking at the goal attempts across the game week. So Gvardiol had 3, Ake had 3 attempts for City, and then Rodri had 3 as well. So the top 3 players for goal attempts for City were not your kind of Grealish, Foden's, Alvarez's, right? This is very unusual to get 3 players like that be the top of the shop for goal attempts, despite the fact that Guardiola was playing a little bit out of position. But again, even he's a funny one, isn't he? Because like you say, if you lose your Gundogans and you lose all that firepower that they had with Kevin De Bruyne being injured as well, you'd think that City would go, okay, well, let's hunker down, right? Let's go and tighten up at the back, particularly as they've bought one of the best left-footed centre-halves in the world for quite a lot of money. Let's play him at left centre-back and we'll just never concede a goal again. But they just haven't. And he's kind of played left-back a bit, and he's playing like left-wing against Palace and stuff. It's like, well, and Ake's come in and played that left centre-back role. You'd think that Guardiola would be in there and just cemented into the team. I don't know. But to your point, as defensively, yeah, I don't think you can trust them or invest in them in FPL, because when I look back at City, and this is probably a bit kind of old school 10 or 15 year ago thinking, or maybe it's not, I don't know, but I always think of good Premier League winning teams have that defensive partnership. They have those two centre-halves, don't they? They have the sort of Van Dijk and Matip or whatever. Or you know, even at Spurs, they had that sort of...
Diaz and Laporte, and you had
at Spurs, Jan Vertonghen and Toby Alderweireld. You had really, really solid two at the back. And they just...
That classic title-winning team.
Yeah, that's such a bad example. That's why I was hesitating. I couldn't think of any other good top defences. But do you know what I mean? So City haven't necessarily got that kind of settled back two, never mind back four. So I don't think you can invest in them in FPL.
I think weirdly,
kept Haaland.
Yeah. The only defender who's playing every minute is Walker, who I think a lot of us would have thought was kind of a risk kind of going into the start of the season. But it's... You know, a 5 million City defender, as he started at, you would think would be a lock in our teams, because you'd think, you know, with the data they've shown over the last few seasons, always top of the kind of the XG data for defense, as in they've got the fewest XG conceded against them. But this year the stats are still good, but they're just not keeping it tight, so you can't really go near them.
Yeah, let's move on then, because obviously with the blank in 18, no one's going to be buying any Man City assets going into 18. It's going to be a conversation for another week. Let's move on to West Ham versus Wolves, and a really good performance from West Ham at home. Paqueta with the 3 assists. Mm. But I'm interested in particular in your opinion on Kudus, because I've got Bowen in my team and I'm very happy to see him pop up with a goal, but overshadowed completely his performance by Kudus and Paqueta as well, who I thought was phenomenal. Magnificent performance from Paqueta. The fixtures for West Ham don't look too bad. They've got Arsenal away in 19, which of course is a tricky looking fixture on the horizon, but Man United at home up next, your team Brighton in 20, again at home where West Ham seem to look better, Sheffield United and Bournemouth on the sort of medium term horizon as well. So except for that Arsenal away game in 19, the fixtures don't look too bad. So if I was to ask you now, where would you go, Kudus or Bowen or even Paqueta, which of those three would you go for and why?
I think Paqueta would be out of the running for my thinking, just because we sometimes see him playing in that kind of quiet defensive role for the side, or a bit more withdrawn. I think when you've got Bowen, who's an out of position player for us in FPL, you know, playing up top, I think he's probably the one that I'd still lean to. But I think we do have to consider Kudus, because I mean, it's three double-digit hauls now he's had this season. He's a little bit like Son. He's almost like a little bit all or nothing. He either blanks or kind of gets these 9 to kind of, you know, 11 scores. And obviously the 16 was a big one for him this week. Do you double up on West Ham attackers? I don't know. I mean, they lost 5-0, you know, to Fulham the week before. But they are scoring in the majority of games. That was a bit of a rarity. They score in almost every game they play in this season. I just think Bowen, with the out-of-position appeal and the amount of goals he scored and his importance to West Ham, is the one. But Kudus is, I tell you, he's a hell of a player. I'm a Brighton fan, and we were linked with him in the summer.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time watching highlight reels and all that kind of stuff. You know, it makes you think, oh, this guy's an amazing talent. And he's come in, and he's one of the few players I've seen who's actually justified that talent, you know, that highlight reel. You know, when you see it and the player arrives, you're like, oh, they really did just take his best bits. No.
Good on YouTube.
Yeah, good. Exactly. Good? Yeah. No, he is another level. He's an absolutely fantastic player. And I think that boosts the West Ham assets in Bowen. So I'd lean towards Bowen, but I think they're both good picks.
Yeah, I really like Kudus. And I think, you know, going into game week one, like you say, or in the summer, let's say, when he was linked with Brighton, I think we were kind of looking at him going, oh, this guy under De Zerbi could be unreal. De Zerbi ball. And we had all that hype about, you know, well, you've seen what he's done with Mitoma and all that stuff. So kind of him going to Brighton, we were kind of invested from an FPL perspective. Then he goes to West Ham and he's playing under, you know, I don't mean this to be disrespectful, but he's playing under David Moyes, who's got a sort of different approach to De Zerbi. You haven't quite got the David Moyes ball in the way that you'd have De Zerbi ball. And we kind of all went, okay, well, maybe I won't, you know, maybe I'll come back to him when he's fully fit and in the team, and let's see how he goes. So there was less excitement with him going to West Ham than to Brighton. But the talent of the player is undeniable. And like you say, I agree with you. He is kind of a little bit like Son from that perspective. It's a bit feast or famine. But with Son, you're paying a premium price for that feast or famine. Whereas with Kudus, you're paying 6.7. So you're probably quite happy to take it. I'm with you, though. I don't know if I would double up. If I've got Bowen already, I don't know if I would go for the double up, which I have, and I have got Bowen already. Bowen doesn't tend to get the bonus points. Like, he's not a bonus point magnet in the way that sort of Kudus is and some of the others are. So even though he got the goal, no bonus points for Bowen again, which is a bit disappointing as an owner. So yeah, I don't think the double up's on, but I think it's closer than maybe you're suggesting between Kudus and Jarrod Bowen. And again, maybe this is the whole kind of, you know, we've said it a couple of times already, maybe this is the Mavericks and us coming out this morning as, but you know, Kudus obviously being far, far lower in his ownership than Bowen, maybe he'd be a nice differential for somebody that's looking to climb the mini league ranks and steal a march on your mini league rivals over the next few weeks.
22% for Bowen, 4% for Kudus. So yeah, a big difference between them. I think, like you mentioned, it took Kudus a little bit of time to kind of establish himself in the team. He didn't get a start until game week 10, for example. And obviously that kind of tempers expectation a little bit on him. But with Bowen moving up top, that's kind of freed up that role for him to come into the side. So you got to look at him kind of with a different lens. And actually, if you look at him since game week 8, you know, it's a really good sequence of games, you know, 4 goals, 3 assists kind of in that time, which is, I guess, on par with kind of elite level players, you know, and almost an attack and return a game pretty much. So yeah, got to consider him.
And then defensively, as is it time up for Areola owners? I mean, West Ham finally get the clean sheet, but it's not Areola that gets it, it's Fabianski. I don't know, you know, maybe an experienced head coming in with Fabianski coming between the 6. Maybe that's what they needed, West Ham. I don't know. But Areola, you know, he was on the bench. So I don't know if Fabianski gets, you know, sent off or injured. You know, obviously it feels like Areola's there and can play. But some sort of problem with his wrist, I think it's probably time to sell him, isn't it?
Oh, we talk about Darwin being a disappointment in our teams. I'm imagining a fair few people listening to this went for Areola. Maybe even the Areola-Turner double up, which, you know, Turner obviously lost his place and he's sort of semi-regained it now, but you never really know week to week whether he's gonna lose out again. And yeah, Areola, I think Fabianski has now got that down for a bit. So he's an easy sell for me. I mean, I sold him last week for Sanchez, who then got injured, which is, you know, typical, isn't it?
So no luck with the goalkeepers. No luck
with the goalkeepers. Started with Onana, which was a disaster. He's obviously been doing a little bit better as of late.
Yeah, yeah.
Then went to Ferreira and then obviously to Sanchez. So yeah, I think, you know, I was listening to FPL Family last night and you were berating Sam for doing the same
move.
She's
in a similar position, right?
In a similar position. And you were saying, you know, why not just go for Dubravka? Surely that was the obvious move. And I think, unfortunately, it is. I think, you know, that there's when you look at, I mean, his price has gone up. He was 3.9, I think, a few weeks ago. Now he's 4.2.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah.
But still a good price, you know, Newcastle starting goalkeeper. Or we mentioned Villa earlier. You know, if there's another way to tap into those clean sheets, maybe you go for Emi Martinez, for example, but he's quite a lot more, you know, 0.9 more you're paying for him. So they're the two that I'm looking at, but it's probably just going to be a move to Dubravka, to be honest.
Dubravka's the one, isn't it? This podcast, we've been so maverick, haven't we? Talking about, you know, how these amazing moves.
Let's rein it in a bit, yeah.
Let's rein it in. Let's go back to being, you know, sensible with our FPL. Dubravka's the keeper to go for, in my opinion. And you're right, you're going to have to suck up, you know, a 0.3 because he was 3.9 a few weeks ago when many FPL managers were going there. But again, another clean sheet. Let's be fair, though. I mean, Newcastle were helped somewhat by the red card for Jimenez at the weekend. Not quite sure what he was thinking there, Jimenez, but a bit out of character for him to get sent off in that way. Almost kind of apologetic. You know, he made the foul and then sort of was like, you know, even in midair, he was like, I shouldn't have done this, should I? And he kind of tried to pull out of it, but by then it was too late. But against 10 men, Newcastle, you know, ran out reasonably comfortable winners in the end at 3-0. Do want to give a shout out to Lewis Miley. I think probably the youngest Newcastle player to ever score a Premier League goal. Absolutely brilliant for him to get off the mark. But again, it was, you know, Anthony Gordon, it was Almiron. It's the usual assets that we've been talking about for some time in FPL that come to the fore. I happened to sell Anthony Gordon this week because there was a little bit in Howe's press conferences, a little bit in the media about, well, he's looking a bit knackered. He can't run perhaps as much as we would like him to. And he was flagged in the game. So I sold him for Richarlison, which is not a move I regret. But I have to say, having watched the Newcastle highlights as a Gordon non-owner, I was very happy at the end of watching those highlights that he only got the six.
Yeah.
Because he had one off the underside of the bar. He was getting in all the right areas, looked the main threat. And again, we shouldn't be surprised. You know, it was a risk me taking out Gordon before a Newcastle home game, because at home so far this season, Gordon has been absolutely unreal. So what do you think of Newcastle going forward? The fixtures don't look too bad. It's Luton and Forest up next. So the next two look all right. Although Luton away, that's a game you wouldn't necessarily want to play, right? You know that Luton are going to be tricky at home. And then Liverpool, Man City, Aston Villa after that from 20. So from 20, it looks difficult. But the next two look all right. I'm not thinking to sell any of my players ahead of those two. Gordon in your team, any defensive assets outside of Dubravka that you're looking at?
Well, I've got Gordon. And there was a comment from Howe. I mean, Howe is normally quite cagey when it comes to press conferences. You never really, you never really know what he really means. But he did make a comment about Gordon, which was something like, he recovers differently, or, you know, he felt some tightness in his hamstring, but he recovers differently to other players, implying that his kind of powers of recovery are maybe a bit different to other players that he's got. And with the amount of injuries that Newcastle have, and the fact Isak missed out again, there's not really any competition on that left-hand spot for Gordon. They need him to kind of just keep playing.
And
because they haven't really got anyone else that can play there. So that was enough for me to keep him. And yeah, like you said, I was a little bit disappointed with just the six, because I watched the highlights and kind of was like head in hands.
Good.
Like, oh,
really good.
Please, you know, that would have been a nice haul, because I think quite a few people benched him or sold him or whatever. I've got Livramento in defence. I think that could be a problem for me a little bit further down the line. Obviously with Cher out, it might be Byrne moving to centre back, but obviously Botman's back as well. So it could be Botman and Lascelles or Botman, but we don't really know what that's going to mean. Trippier's back, which is key. I think obviously very highly owned. Lots of people would have benched him through the suspension last week. He's had a little rest, which I think is massive.
Yeah,
because I think his performances haven't been great in the weeks kind of leading up to the suspension. So actually taking him out, this was kind of an excuse really to take him out and give him a bit of a break. And he's actually the one I'm looking at bringing in this week, because it's Luton and Forest next, which I really like the look of. It's a tough run after that, though. Liverpool, Man City, and Villa away.
Yeah, yeah.
Particularly. But if I bring in Trippier, then that means I can maybe lose Livramento in a few weeks and just rock with Gordon and Trippier going forward.
Done nothing to lose his spot, though, has he, Livramento? I mean, Eddie Howe's got a real decision to make there, because he's been fabulous, right? No goal involvement at the weekend, still gets the 3 bonus points.
Yeah, I think he's... I mean, Burn is a big favourite of Howe. Yeah, so sure, I mean, enough, it'll be interesting to see what Howe does with it. And I think it's just adding in that extra bit of competition with Botman and Burn back. I wouldn't expect Livramento to play maybe every match, but you know, it's one of those ones where would I buy Livramento now? Definitely not.
No.
Would I sell him? I'm going to give it a few weeks to see, but I just want to have an exit strategy in just in case.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, let's finish up. We've got a couple more games to talk about. Chelsea versus Sheffield United. Now, again, when we spoke about Liverpool versus United, we were talking about how bad the first half was. Listen, this was not much better. Chelsea really not at the races first half, and Sheffield United would do it, you know, without really breaking a sweat. We were keeping them contained. But Pochettino, fair play, mixed it up a little bit, put Sterling alongside Jackson up top, got the job done in the end. I have to say, though, I'm not really, despite the fixtures, because it's Wolves and Palace and Luton and Fulham up next, they do look quite good, but I'm pretty happy with Cole Palmer and I don't think I'm going to go anywhere else. So you got your eye on anybody other than Cole Palmer at Chelsea?
No, I think this is probably quite a short section, yeah, really.
I'd say so.
You know, Palmer is obviously absolutely kind of fantastic. 13 goal involvement in 19 appearances. For Palmer since he signed, obviously started the season at 5 million, went down to 4.9. If you snapped him up then, you're absolutely laughing.
Absolutely.
I still think now, you know, if you haven't got him, I think he's close to essential. I don't like to use the word essential, but, you know, when you've got someone with that kind of consistency on penalties, playing for a team with good fixtures at that price as well, you could be trying to be clever, you could try and ignore it and go for other ones. And in the end, you end up paying six five for him, you know, kind of.
Why did City sell him? He looks absolutely brilliant, doesn't he? A snip at 40 million or whatever it is that Chelsea paid for him. Looked absolutely brilliant, doesn't
it? I know. I saw him score. I actually went to Wembley to see the City Arsenal Community Shield game, and obviously Palmer scored the goal in that. And I thought to myself, oh, there's Mahrez is gone. There's a spot
there
now.
Yeah.
For him to kind of walk into, and obviously chose to go elsewhere, and looks like a great decision because he's doing well. For Chelsea. So just Palmer for me. I think Sterling, Jackson. Interesting to see what Nkunku does when he comes back. He was on the bench.
Yeah, on radar. Yeah.
Yep, he's on the radar. But defensively, I think obviously they've had Sheffield United now. I don't fully trust them at the back. I was looking at Petrovic as maybe a cheap kind of goalkeeper, but he's not actually that cheap. He's only 0.1 less than Sanchez, 4.5. So... yeah, no, maybe Cole Will in defence, but just Palmer.
I think just Palmer for me as well. Just Palmer for me. Like you say, a short segment, I think. Equally, Arsenal versus Brighton, your team. So, again, good job done by Arsenal. I thought they were fantastic against your lot at the weekend. And they've got in the usual suspects back, right? So all of the key players are now back for us. I've got Gabby Jesus back up front. A lot of the players are looking fit and firing. Thoughts? I've got Saka, I've got Gabriel. I'm pretty happy with those two. I thought Saka was a bit unlucky not to pick up an assist at the weekend. So, yes, it's a blank or it's a three-pointer for Saka, but could have been more. No thoughts to really move them on, to be honest with you, or no real thoughts to add to that. Liverpool away next, which, of course, is going to be a hell of a game at the top of the league, a real six-pointer. But then after that, the fixtures look great. West Ham, Fulham, Crystal Palace, so three London derbies, followed by a trip to Nottingham Forest. So, Saka and Gabriel for me, pretty happy with that. Going to stick with it.
Yeah, I mean, a bit of a schooling, really. I think as a Brighton fan watching that game, Arsenal were
good.
They were more than good. They were absolutely brilliant, and they didn't let us play. And you know, last season we went to the Emirates and we won, and it kind of ruined Arsenal's season, really, because it kind of ended their title aspirations. But there was none of that this year. You know, they made Milner look kind of very average, and obviously such a great player, such an experienced player. They just didn't let us play. We couldn't get the ball to Ferguson. Lallana was kind of ineffective. Matoma was well dealt with, you know, on the left. So from a Brighton perspective, very, very little to talk about. You know, great result in Europe, and the season isn't over because we've lost 2-0 to Arsenal. But, you know, it was a very poor performance. But Arsenal were looking they were looking every bit the team that's going to... I still think they're going to win the league this year. I said at the start of the season, I just think they're so strong in midfield now with Rice. He's you cannot underestimate how good that boy is, because he is just absolutely ridiculous. I think the issue with Arsenal, though, is what do we do with their assets kind of FPL wise, because, you know, defensively they haven't been keeping loads of clean sheets. Obviously Saliba got a few bonus and Gabriel got one this time, and that's fine. Zinchenko I think looks an option. But you know, if I didn't have them, I don't know if I'd be fearing them kind of every week, because they're not doing that well. And then it's, you know, Martinelli, Trossard are being rotated. Saka's not really been delivering very high. It's Jesus I'm looking at. When we talked about strikers earlier, low-owned strikers, I wonder if Jesus could be the one to consider. Obviously, it's Liverpool next, but then a decent run. And he's got a couple of goals and an assist over the last few weeks. So maybe Jesus could be a pick.
Yeah, three attacking returns in his last three, I think, for Jesus, isn't it? So he's definitely on a bit of form. Like you say, not going to bring him in ahead of a trip to Anfield, I don't think. But after that, yeah, maybe it's worth having a look at him. Like you say, you've got to find a little bit more money to go from Darwin to Jesus. But given that we're both so keen to get rid of Darwin and we'll bring in literally anyone to, to replace him, then maybe he's on radar. Just to finish up then, as a quick thought on captaincy and maybe some early transfer thoughts for next game week, I, for one, have got the captaincy set on Ollie Watkins, and I don't think that's going to change. What do you think?
Well, it was such an easy captain pick for Salah, and obviously that went so well last week. So, sometimes the obvious picks aren't always the best ones, but Watkins, to me, is again, the obvious pick. I think, you know, home game for Villa against anyone is a great fixture, given how their home record. And then it's Sheffield United, who have been really poor sort of all season. So quite an easy one. I mean, the left field one is maybe Son, home to Everton. Or maybe even Richarlison, if you had one of those. If you don't have Watkins, but I think if you've got Watkins, you're captain.
Yeah, and in terms of transfers for next week, as we've discussed, Calvert-Lewin and Moreno and Kuna. So we've been quite maverick this morning, haven't we? But I think other than moving Nunes on, I haven't really got any thoughts as to where I'm going to go yet. But plenty of football to come this week, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my moves aren't going to be very maverick after all that. I think it's going to be a goalkeeper move. I know. Well, it's going to be a goalkeeper move, isn't it? Because I've got Turner and Sanchez, who I think I need to address that. So it's probably going to be Sanchez or Dybravka for me. I have got my eye on Trippier as well. If I bought Trippier in, it means I could bench Darwin this week. So it would probably be that. But then I also really want Porro, as we talked about earlier. So I think it's going to be a defensive move. It's just whether it's goalkeeper or for an attacking fullback.
Yeah, after all that then, as not very maverick, a goalkeeper move, and not just a goalkeeper move, but Dubravka, the goalkeeper that everyone's got, mate. Come on, everyone's got it.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, it's not the most interesting. I mean, the thing is, do hold your transfers. You know, there's EFL League Cup matches on Tuesday and Wednesday, yes. And the Game Week 18 deadline is on Thursday. Six Premier League sides play. So yeah, I'll hold those transfers until the cup fixtures have been played out. Also, we've got the Super Cup as well, like I mentioned, on Tuesday. So we get hopefully a bit of news on Haaland. But Kelly and Jules and Sam, we're back with the FPL Pod on Wednesday this week. They'll be looking ahead to the blank game week in 18, where both Brentford and Man City failed to feature.
And if you haven't done so already, join the FPL Pod League. The code is IB3WLK.
See you next time, everyone.